Sector Omnibus Committee Report. John and Phil, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Let me get my cough drop, and I'll be ready to go. Late in the day. Tab number 9. This might be advantageous to say move approval. Without objection. But let me run through it a little bit anyways, just to earn my keep, Mr. Chairman. We'll wait for that day in a little bit. So under tab 9, we'll be using document number 1, which is the June 6th memo to the council. And very briefly, the committee has been meeting, has met 3 times, gone over the terms of reference and other issues that have come up. The committee's worked very diligently on trying to address those terms of reference as well as the other questions. And I think it's been an interesting discussion. I think I've certainly learned a lot. And it's been, I think, very enlightening for all of us. And I think the discussions and the votes for our recommendations reflect the amount of work that's been done. In many cases, in most cases, it's been unanimous recommendations to the council. After our third meeting, I asked the staff to work with the regional office to take a look at our recommendations and look at them in the light of regulatory language and see if there was any areas that needed further clarification. Our regional office sent back a list of questions that they felt needed to be further clarified, and I worked with staff to develop what I understood was the consensus or the opinion of the committee for these various points. I sent that out to the committee asking for their concurrence on my point of view. And so what we've done on this document, Mr. Chairman, is to list the various questions, terms of reference, the committee's recommendations or consensus, wherever we had that, and in a shaded area, as I'm sure you all saw a shaded area, that's where the clarifications that I felt were appropriate, and that's what was circulated to the committee members for their concurrence, is put in play. So what I'm planning on doing at the end of this, after I go through the whole thing, is to make a motion, not on behalf of the committee, but I'll make the motion, see if I get a second, that will look to the council accepting the recommendations and also the clarifications, again, that are in the shaded area for approval by the council. So I just want to make sure that that's clear up front. Some of these things, even though we sent it out for consensus by the committee, I didn't get feedback, and we sent it out again, asked them, and without hearing back from folks, I'm always going on the assumption that my clarification is therefore acceptable, which I think in most cases it is. But if there are any areas of clarification after I make the motion, we can certainly have that discussion. So having said that, you have on the first page, again, that verbiage that I just went through. You also have the terms of reference. Flipping to the next page, we get to number 1 and 2. These are the definitions that we worked on for sector, which I thought was interesting with our discussions this morning. Notice I kept my mouth shut about that. Anyways, we held these two definitions as our guidelines for when we're going through the overall terms of reference. And ultimately, it seemed that we had come to a consensus that that the definition for sector would be definition number two. That is, that you are, means a group of persons holding limited access vessel permits who have voluntarily entered into a contract and agree to certain fishing restrictions for a specified period of time and which has been granted a TAC in order to achieve objectives consistent with applicable FMP goals and objectives. And that difference differs, as you can see, from specified fishing privileges, which is listed in number one. I think the consensus from the committee is that definition number two is what we would recommend to the council for adoption. The following items, then, are the MSA requirements that dealt with the fees, cost recovery standards, and LAP fees. And we had not dealt with those because, again, I think as you heard this morning, the service is still working to try to come up with guidelines and definitions associated with those. So we did not feel that we should move ahead on those particular items. Then we got into the terms of reference, and we broke that up under a different series. Allocation is the first one, then mortality control, size, et cetera. So dealing with allocation, there are several points that are in the terms of reference about TACs, and our committee unanimously approved the following motion, which addresses the three bullets above, and that is that sectors adopt annual catch limits, ACLs, and accountability measures, AMs, for species managed under the sectors, FMP, and measures consistent with ACLs and AMs for each FMP for incidentally caught species. Now, the gray area that we needed for clarification is the next section. Again, I'm going to read it very quickly. The discussion includes the concept that a sector may choose to be allocated a subset of all relevant stocks, and on the basis of stock status, and that it was our intent that the stock condition would be used to determine allocation eligibility in a manner consistent with the relevant FMPs. Again, this is going to the species committees, and they are looking at this and using this as the guidelines for deciding what type of allocation would be done to sectors. The next one was, how should sector shares be allocated? And we felt that sector shares should be allocated as a percentage of the ACL. How about discards? We felt that discards would not count towards a sector's allocation, but they would count against a sector's share unless the sector can provide other accountability for the discards and obtain an exemption, i.e., you go to the species committees and you get what you get, or you come up with some creative ideas on how you're going to deal with the discards. Following our April 26 meeting, the regional office staff asked a little bit more about that calculation of the sector allocation as a percentage of total landing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You can read that. And we felt that the we agreed with their overall interpretation of how they were interpreting our previous motion. So you can read that. I think it's fairly straightforward. The next one was, should sectors be allowed before the council has a clearly allocated catch? One of the terms of reference said that sectors would be This amendment would not delay consideration of other sectors in a general category, scallops and other FMPs. So we did not address that, but that is one of the questions that I think we would be discussing a little bit further after we deal with the motion, this overall motion. That's one of the areas that I think we certainly has come to the forefront in the very recently. The next thing we dealt with was mortality control. And looking at overages amongst the sectors, the committee provided this following motion, and it was based on the provisions in Amendment 13 regarding overages by sector and non-sector vessels. If the sector does not exceed its assigned share or percentage in a given fishing year, but other sectors or a common pool do, the sector's allocation would not be reduced. If the sector exceeds its annual allocation, but others do not, then the sector share would be reduced in the following year. And if everyone stays within their share, but the resource condition requires a reduction, then all groups would take the reduction. Next question was dealt with the how do you, you know, how is a reduction in mortality apportioned between sector and non-sector participants if neither group, God forbid, operates within its limits? And this we felt would be was already addressed in our previous motion, and that any other specifics would be worked out by the individual species committees within their respective plans. Next question was, would exceeding a TAC cause the sector to close? The committee agreed that any TAC applied to a sector when reached were to result in the sector fishery closing. The next one was, if non-sector vessels exceeded the TAC, would adjustments also reduce available TAC to the sector, even if the sector did not exceed its portion? And there's more, as you can see, questions about that. We feel that we've already addressed that under the first motion on how to deal with any overages and who pays the penalties for that type of problem. Size of sectors. Should there be a maximum size? Should there be a minimum size? We felt that each FMP, with the exception of red crab, should define a minimum sector size by specifying a minimum number of participants expressed as the number of individuals or percentage of permits in order to ensure accountability among sector members and not complicate administrative administration or enforcement. Again, a clarification on the size, maximum size. My feeling was that the committee agreed that the question of sector size limitations is a matter to be taken up by the individual species committees in the development of their sector programs or evaluation of sector requests. The other issues, under the terms of reference, what happens to the members and capacity that could become idle? The committee felt that each sector applicant must identify potential redirection of effort as a result of the sector operations and propose limitations, sideboards, if necessary, to eliminate any adverse effects of effort redirection. There was a question about monitoring, reporting, and review requirements for sectors. We discussed it at length, but took no action on that. As a final clarification, in the shaded language, the committee agreed that the objectives for adopting sector programs for FMP are FMP-specific and should be stated by the species committees when considering the development of sector proposals and further that the Species Committee should adopt a periodic evaluation of sector programs via the review of annual reports in the context of each FMP sector objectives. The committee also agrees that the requirement to report catch already exists in these various programs that are out there, and that would be the basis for other sector programs to under multi-species, for example, to consider, and that any additional reporting requirements should be stated in each sector's operations plan and reviewed annually. The question of if a management program for a fishery has not changed through a change in specs, framework, or other action, should sectors be required to annually submit an environmental assessment? We felt that each FMP may allow proposals that request authorization for multi-year operations. If it's allowed, and if the range of possible changes, i.e. memberships or quota, is analyzed in the EA, then a new EA would not be needed to be prepared each year. There were other issues that came up before the committee that really weren't part of the terms of reference, and continuing on page 5, the bottom of page 5, we had tried to address those and provide insight on those also. This is the first one dealt with transfers of quotas. We felt that each FMP may allow transfer of quotas among sectors contingent on evaluation of proposals. And the clarification for that is that if any transfers of TAC between sectors is allowed within an FMP sector program, those transfers would be on an annual basis, and that the sector TACs would reset each year based on the membership, which may change year to year. Further, that the committee agrees that the sector managers could be authorized to request a quota transfer between themselves, and that they may do so at any time after the TACs for that fishing year have been finalized. The Species Committee should develop FMP-specific criteria for the approval or disapproval of TAC transfers. If a sector transfers a portion of its TAC to another sector and then exceeds its remaining portion, the transferred portion would not be affected, but the sector would have its TAC reduced proportionally the following year by the amount of the overage. We also looked at the question of appropriate baseline periods. And this one was probably the only one that was not unanimous, 3-1, approved the following, that each FMP must identify a single, fixed, and permanent baseline for the purpose of sector allocation. And just to explain it a little bit further as you read along here, we also agreed there may be exceptions to that motion. And the example that we batted about quite a bit was the herring fishery, where there's different management, there's separate management areas, each having its own distinct quota. And sectors may be more appropriately established with different baselines for each of those areas, and that would be determined by the herring committee. And there may be other committees that also find themselves in that same situation, although herring was the only one we discussed. Regional office asked for clarification about the process of forming sectors and were they based on the existing multi-species FMP process, and we felt that yes, each species committee should take a look at that multi-species FMP process, utilizing the portions of it, the language of it, that would be appropriate for their sector development, the basic guidelines that are in there. We took a look at the definition of a geographic area. The regional office felt that the geographic area associated with each sector would enhance enforcement, provided the geographic area is a smaller than the jurisdiction of the FMP, and we agreed with the question of geographic limitation on sectors as a matter to be taken up by the individual species committees. The our office also commented on guidance on the formation or operation of the sector and how the common pool vessels would not be unfairly disadvantaged, and that the regional office would, regional administrator would have the authority to deny approval of a sector or withdraw approval if the common pool vessels are not being fairly treated. Our feeling was that the individual species committees, in considering sector proposals, must consider bycatch by other fisheries, effort displacement, and the impacts on the common pool, i.e. non-sector vessels, and any other relevant factors when allocating TAC. Really, the question of whether the RA authority to approve the sector plans really should be based on specific evaluation criteria. And if that's the case, we were asking the regional office to forward those types of criteria so that they can be considered, and we would all be cognizant of what they were going to be using as a evaluation. Going on to page 7, last page, Mr. Chairman. The regional office felt that the committee implied but not made clear that a vessel can only be a member of one sector within a particular FMP in a given fishing year. And they felt that should be a stated requirement. We agreed that a vessel could only be in one sector within an FMP in any one fishing year, and then that a vessel cannot be in more than one sector in a different FMP in the same year. Let's see, the eligibility criteria for individuals should be implemented in a fair, uniform manner, and we agreed that the sectors are responsible for ensuring that their eligibility criteria is implemented in a fair and uniform manner. It's the responsibility of the sectors, not the committee or the council. And the blanket exemptions, the next one was blanket exemptions that would be disallowed in all sectors, or would these be decided on an FMP by FMP basis? We felt that for the matter of exemptions would be decided on an FMP by FMP basis, and would be subject to council approval during the adoption of an FMP sector program. Then the last one was the regional office asked about the current groundfish regulation, yada, yada, regarding permanent reduction in sector shares based on repeated overages. What should they do? And our consensus is that the committee agrees that overages of a sector's allocation would be addressed in an annual review, annual evaluation, and reauthorization process, and that individual species committees would establish the appropriate response for repeated overages, which may include disapproval of an operational plan, i.e. dissolving of the sector. Those were the issues that we tackled, Mr. Chairman, and those are the advice and recommendations, clarifications that we are recommending for the council to consider. Obviously, they would be focused on going to the species committees for a uniform evaluation of any sector proposals that comes before that committee and then comes back to the council for consideration. So the motion that I'd like to make, and I do need a second because, again, the clarifications I'm not presuming are the recommendations directly from the committee. So I would move to approve the sector committee's recommendations and the Sector Committee Chairman's clarifications, which is shaded text in the memo dated June 6, 2007.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Any discussion on the motion? John, you want to keep going? Or?
No, see if there's discussion. I mean, that was a lot of ground covered, and I think the memo is fairly clear. But there may be different points of view out here that we want to make sure we've covered also, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to urge the council to approve this post right away because during the deliberations, which were carried out very carefully, we were very cognizant of the relationship of sectors to ITQs. That's a question that came up earlier today. And that, and we very carefully stayed away from wording things in such a way that we would trigger a referendum. We were cognizant of the legal ramifications as well as the ITQ ramifications. And I have not seen anything that has been done so far in the council that has been so carefully done in terms of wording. As an example, on the sector definition, if you look, that was worded, reworded, stroked, and worked over extensively. And if you look, the wording is extraordinarily careful. For instance, after the comma, and which has been granted, it's evident there from the use of the tense that it refers to the group and not the persons. That's important to make certain that it's not somehow misinterpreted as being some sort of an endorsement of ITQs. So the wording was very careful in that regard, and I would urge the council to pass this motion.
Dr. Pierce, then Sally.
John, to the motion, just a couple of clarifications. In particular, page 3, I don't understand what is meant in that shaded text. That, first of all, the shaded text begins with the committee discussion included, yet you say in the motion that your specific clarifications are the shaded text. So I need to get that squared away, first of all. It seems like was confusing because sometimes it seems like the committee did conclude these things, but then again, you're spinning it because you're chair and you're clarifying things. So how are you spinning it?
Spinning, huh? Yeah, that sounds like Bill O'Reilly or something. Right? I'm not trying to interpret it in any particular way, David. When the questions came up from the regional office in regard to a particular motion that we had made, staff and I went back over the discussions that the committee had, and that's how I tried to classify it as the committee discussed, and that my recollection and staff's recollection was that this was what we had come to a consensus on. And that's what I sent out to the committee to see, indeed, if our recollection and our interpretation, my interpretation, was true to what the discussion was that we had and what folks had come up with. Okay. So that's what the intent was for this language.
Okay, thanks, John. Yeah, this obviously was a challenge, and you and staff did a fine job clarifying the committee's position. But, again, what does that mean on page 3, that bold-faced text? The sector may choose to be allocated a subset of all relevant stocks on the basis of stock status. The committee's intent is that stock condition would be used to determine allocation eligibility in a manner consistent with the relevant F&Ps.
It means that the species committees should... number one, make sure that they have developed annual catch limits, which we have to do for all of the RFMPs, and also accountability measures. And that we need to take into account if you're going to allocate a TAC to a sector, that they may be looking for other species, a subset of allocations for discards, for example. and that they need to take into account the overall condition of that stock and what the overall objective of that FMP calls for that species. That's the intent of it. It's asking the species committees to keep in mind that they can't just say, oh, yeah, well, not a problem. Go ahead with, you can have discards, normal discards or something like that. I think we're looking at TACs for discards for sectors so that they are very controlled as far as what they're doing and how they're harvesting their principal species and interacting with other species and other FMPs.
Okay, thank you. A couple of comments and then a question, again, relative to the motion. And that is, first of all, I'm glad to see on page 6 that the committee took the position that it did take regarding, well, this is the first bullet, actually, below the shaded text. Each FMP must identify a single fixed and permanent baseline for the purpose of sector allocation. That's critical. We have to work off the same baselines and not have different sectors with different baselines. That will be very messy. And I'm also very happy to see the shaded text, your interpretation with staff's assistance regarding the committee's position that, this is the bottom of page 6, that shaded text, that sector proposals must consider that bycatch in other fisheries. And here's one that's really important to me, and it should be to the council, because it's it could really confound us tremendously. That's effort displacement. All sorts of, not games, but fishermen are entrepreneurs, clever businessmen, and as I get more and more involved in sectors and I see how sectors perform, I see that, you know, clever men and women are making some interesting business deals. And some of this relates to effort displacement from fisheries into state waters, for example, and that's causing us some grief in Massachusetts. Effort displacement into mid-Atlantic fisheries. This gets messy. So I'm glad that you've got that impacted in there. You've got that included there. And then impact on common pool non-sector vessels. Just need a clarification here. You say, or the committee says, that is, that, let's see here, the formation or operation of sectors should not be unfairly disadvantage the common pool. And then you use the word again at the end of that paragraph. Common pool vessels should not be unfairly impacted. Was there any discussion relative to what that means? What exactly is an unfair disadvantage and an unfair impact? Did you have anything in mind, or did you just throw that in there as a smart way to word it?
I invite my fellow committee members to help me with any examples. The intent, David, was to be cognizant, for the species committees to be cognizant of, not everybody's going to be in the sector. Maybe they are, but for those that are not in a sector, they need to make sure that the operation of that sector will not have an adverse impact or unduly affect those others, those non-sector folks, i.e., a simple thing is how you allocate the TAC and how much you allocate. You need to obviously take into consideration that if you've got half the industry in a sector and half is not, that you obviously take into account how much is an allocation of the TAC for these folks. That's a very simple one, and I mean very obvious. And I again, either it's because it's late or I have too many cough drops in me, that I can't really come up with another good example. But it's trying to wave a red flag to the species committees and say, when you're looking at this operation plan, you need to make sure you've taken into account a lot of things, one of which is, how does this affect the non-sector pool? And is there anything that is going to disadvantage them because of approving this sector? And maybe it's marketability of the product or something. I can't come up with another example. But it's for them to have that discussion and make sure that they've addressed it. There may be nothing, but at least they've gone through it and said, okay, there's a problem here or there's not a problem here.
Okay, good clarification. And finally, my last point. On page 5 at the bottom, this is a little bit, well, the committee agrees that if any transfers of TAC between sectors is allowed. So you're not saying it should be allowed. You're just saying if it's allowed. Okay, fine enough. Because you say if, it causes me to back off a bit because at this point in time, I'm not very keen on the transfer of TAC between sectors. Sounds to me with that sort of a setup, things can get out of control and games can really be played. But anyways, it makes me think that with that said, we're looking at ISTQs, individual sector transferable quotas, and now we're getting into a fine line between ITQs and sector allocations. So I'm still thinking along the lines of these sectors being ITQs and not apart from that way of classifying these creatures.
Are we,
but anyways, you said if, so that because you said if, I'll back away from my. My concern about, for now anyways, my concern about that strategy of transfers of TACs between sectors.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Splendid job.
All right. And I also said may. So there's some conditionaling about that. But I think as far as your concern about share, I think it was – it's not an ITQ. It's not a – and it's not an IS. It is to some degree, but that's not defined in the law as an issue, because you're looking at a common pool, and how that common pool might be maneuvered if you wanted to do that between sectors. We're merely providing that flexibility for sectors who have to account for things. There's definitely accountability in here, and there's an annual review of how they did. And if you've got somebody who's messing up, basically the committee's approach was get rid of them.
Paul Howard, then Phil.
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to mention I talked to Laura Singleton. You know, GMRI is hosting a reception for us 6 to 7:30, and she's been very gracious to say that she'll stay there longer. But, you know, they have a caterer and everything. So all I'd mention is for the council deliberation to be mindful that they are hosting a reception and that they are going to stay there a little longer for us. So when we leave here. So just be mindful of that with your debate. Thank you.
Phil, did you want to step in?
Yeah, very briefly on David's question, because I think it's important and relates to the other discussions this morning. One of the distinguishing factors of this is that it's only a one-time annual transfer, not a permanent transfer to another sector. And the genesis of this is an example that occurred off of Rhode Island this year. Dave Preble brought it up, that all of a sudden there was a lot more cod in a particular area than had been observed before. And if a sector had a certain allocation of cod and they all of a sudden this happened, they would be in a situation of having to discard or shut down. But they could continue to operate if they could just get a short-term, one-time transfer from somebody else who may not be having that same fortunate experience but has an allocation. So I think there is a difference between that and an ITQ on that basis.
Cy McGee.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I missed this at the beginning, but I just want to know what the process is here. You know, the original intent was for the committee to develop an amendment. And we'd had a lot of discussion about whether the council should simply adopt a policy as guidance for species committees that wanted to develop sectors or not. And there are a lot of outstanding things here for the species committees to address before a comprehensive amendment could be completed. So I'm just wondering what direction this is going to take, just given kind of the general nature of the motion.
Well, the that was the second component of discussion for the council. If you folks looked at my cover page, we wanted, number one, to make sure that these recommendations and clarifications are what you had anticipated for us to work on and deal with. And then that after that is taken care of, then the question is, all right, does the council, because of other circumstances, and the other circumstances are that it seems like everybody wanted to all of a sudden put a place marker in or develop a sector proposal, does the council want to use these recommendations as the policy to evaluate everything if you're going to move ahead with other sector proposals? Or is the guidance back to the committee to continue to develop an amendment, and this would be a component of the new amendment? So that's the next question that would be coming forward. I was trying to do it in two-part phase to keep it, number one, focused on the content of what we've done and that it makes sense, that it answer the questions that people had. And then the next one would be, I suspect at least, it might be short. It might be, people might say, this is what you're going to do, and that's it. And I'm not judging which way that's going to go, but let's see if we can finish this one first.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's so gratifying to know we're finally in the no-spin zone. Just quickly, at the executive committee meeting, there was some brief discussion about this amendment and some of the concerns as to how the committee would address some of these issues. At least from my standpoint, I think that the committee has done a very thorough and thoughtful job addressing all of these and certainly addressed a lot more concerns than had been discussed. And so I would certainly support this first motion.
Okay, I'd prefer to really get through this tonight, so. Let's see. Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a member of the committee, I was asked whether I concurred with these things, and in most cases, all of the specific issues and points that were made, I do concur with. The difficulty, and I think the motion begs the question that it's really the second part of it, is how do we deal with this? Because many of these, if you approve this motion, many of them are specifically saying you're going to be referred back to the Species Committee, and or the Species Committee or the FMP will develop answers to these questions specifically. And the problem then comes is how do we do that? If we make an amendment, then and you're referring to the committee to specifically deal with some of these issues separately, how does that integrate into the amendment? Do you get them to give you the advice first so you roll it into the amendment, and then the amendment specifies what the committee, the individual species committee, are wanted to do? So I think we need to have some good discussion here about just how that procedure will work. I think this general sentiment that the ideas that have come up with here, the sort of policy approach that's been taken is pretty good. I think the committee supports that. But I still think that it's unclear to me how we're going to manage to do that mechanically in terms of an amendment. And I personally would think that there's great value in doing this through the amendment process so that it does apply across the board and gets every different species FMP at least a significant step forwards towards allowing sectors. I think we can, there are ways to do it, but I think that we just need to clarify before we pass this motion. Thank you.
I think what I talked to about earlier with the chairman is that I think with the new requirement to put ACLs and AMs in all of our management plans, we're going to have to amend all our plans. So that my recommendation would be that we we set some policy. We turn this meeting summary into a SOPS policy statement that, you know, these things are across all plans, like John has done, and these plans will be handled individually as each species committee develops an amendment for ACLs and AMs, so that we don't do two amendments. We don't do an amendment now in herring, or we don't do an omnibus amendment, plus have to do another amendment with herring to do ACLs and AMs. You know, because we've been told so far we have to identify what they are, even if we have them, so that they're approvable and meet the new rules. So my recommendation would be set policy, and then the ground fish amendment will follow this policy and include ACLs and AMs in their amendment 16. And, you know, and then when we do the ACLs and AMs for herring, for that amendment, they'll also include sectors in that amendment following this policy, if they want to. And it would be very difficult and not as efficient to do an omnibus amendment across all the plans, which would be an amendment, and then have each other species committee do an amendment as well for ACLs and AMs, when you can just include it that way.
Yeah, if we go forward with the omnibus, in order to put sector language in FMPs other than groundfish in FMPs, that creates a functioning tool in those FMPs for someone in the fishery to come forward with a sector proposal. In order to get to that point, we're going to need species committees or this council to determine the baselines for every FMP and all the other things that were contained in this document that are referred back to individual species committees or the council to determine. And if you line up the timing of getting through all of that with this other requirement to do ACLs and accountability measures in every FMP, in some cases by 2010 and in other cases by 2011, the timing works out roughly the same for most FMPs. Jim?
Well, I understand that difference, and I think this is kind of the critical issue of this motion, and I think there's another way. The value of having an omnibus amendment is that it would set both policy and it would implement that. Now, there are certain issues that are too specific, perhaps, we'll call it, too specific for a particular fishery that you would like to have the input of that specific FMP or that committee. And it seems to me you could, by pushing this in the process of moving this forward to an amendment, you could task the committees, not, you don't have to change everything, but the committees, to answer specific questions. As one example, we had a discussion about the baseline in the herring fishery. And it soon became clear that there were some specific or kind of unique circumstances in that fishery that warranted attention by the people who are actually in it and were familiar with it and really could come to grips with it. But it seemed that you could do that through advice from the committees of those specific species committees, and then integrate that into specific language in the amendment so that you'd actually get an amendment that would go across the board and do what you wanted to do. And you'd have some specificity in it that would relate only to certain species. And this way, I think you could move it forward. My concern with saying, well, you know, we're going to have amendments for everything is I don't think that's true. Every year we go through we're going to put this above the line and that below the line. And many of these things, some of the simplest ones, are going to be below the line and not much is going to happen with them. So it seems to me we often say, well, this is too complicated to do now comprehensively. Let's let each one do it in the future. But it's just as complicated in the future, maybe more complicated. And I don't think, and often we shortchange those fisheries that don't have another problem at the same time. So I would urge the council to consider carefully that we should push forward with an amendment and try to integrate some of the specific issues that have been raised in this document that need to be dealt with by individual species FMPs, that they be dealt with by the committees for those FMPs and be rolled into the amendment. Thank you.
That's certainly another alternative. But to be fair, there isn't a lot of latitude for the council to not initiate FMPs in all of our plans. We're required to do that for the ACLs and the AMs. But the overall discussion that has been going on is a policy discussion for the council. But to a certain degree, the workload or those issues we have to deal with over the next several years is somewhat scripted already as a result of the requirements of the Act. We're going to have to figure that one out. Maybe we'll have an ACLAM omnibus. Anyone else? Dave.
Yeah, John, I had a couple of questions here, things that I think need more clarification. The first one is on the definition. There's no mention of commonality at all, i.e., the sectors we have right now have some degree of commonality, hook boats that fish George's Bank, gillnet boats that fish George's Bank. I'm concerned that without some kind of a commonality clause in here that we could have people self-selecting sectors that, I don't know, you know, a couple of boats from the Gulf of Maine, a couple of boats from off New Jersey, you know, hopeless mishmash of gear types. And again, David Pierce said it nicely. We're innovative people. I can come up with a number of ways that I can make a whole lot of money if I can get shares from one area and then send a boat to do something else. So I think that should be more restrictive than it is. It should have some degree of commonality. That's number one. The second one is on the bottom of page 3. On the overages, there's no requirement for a vessel to stay in the sector if there's an overage. So I can see a situation develop where we overfish something, you know, we go over, and then everybody leaves the sector. You got no way to pay it back. They're all back in the general pool. So I think they should be required to stay in the sector for at least the following year. This may, to some degree, create self-perpetuating sectors that are constantly in a payback position. But if you don't do something, I can just see how everybody's just going to say, okay, we went over, now we're out of here. Third one, I think that sector management plans, I go a little further than Dave Pierce did. I think they must address their impact on other sectors and the general pool and other fisheries, and specifically state how they're not going to impact other fisheries. Again, let's take 6 boats in my area. We form a sector. We send one boat out to catch the sector's groundfish. We turn 2 more loose in the whiting fishery. They never went whiting fishing before. It's open access. We turn 3 more loose as shrimp boats. Maybe we send a couple lobster fishing. We could have enormous increase in mortality in other fisheries if we don't specifically require that sectors say how they're not going to increase their mortality in other fisheries by forming a sector. So I think these things have to be very specifically laid out, and until they are, I'm not prepared to move ahead with this.
Well, David, the point on the first point as far as the definition, the folks that are coming into this are going to enter a contract. Then that contract and that operational plan that they're putting forward would be evaluated by the species committees. That was our approach to it. Quite frankly, if it doesn't mesh or doesn't fit well, the species committees don't have to approve it. That's where the species committees and the council have the ability to, quite frankly, deny these sectors if it's kind of has a bad smell to it. You don't have to move ahead with it at all. But we try to. We talked about it a little bit as far as who could belong to it, and that's why we left it as a group of individuals. But they've agreed to something, and they've entered into a contract, and they've all said, this is how we're going to operate during this year. Or their plan will say, half of them aren't going to fish, and that's how they're not going to have an impact, going to one of your other questions. They're not going to have an impact in other fisheries because their plan says they're not going to fish. They're going to let the other half go out there and reap the benefits of those guys working while these guys stay at home and watch The View or something like that. That's the intent of it. Now, as far as the an overage and then guys saying, I was over that year, I'm out of here. We did talk about that, and I think the intent under on page three is that that sector does have to pay back. And so, however, it is decided by the, again, by the species committees, recognizing that you've exceeded, and therefore you are all responsible for that, and you are all going to pay back somehow. And that's, we left it open for them on how to determine how they're going to pay it back. But that was the intent of that particular language, to make sure that if there's an overage, they all are going to pay back. If they're determined that you got an overage, you've got to have your membership stay exactly the same for this coming year, and they're all getting cut back accordingly, that's what the Species Committee and the Council can determine how it's going to be handled. So I hope that helps. We tried to give enough flexibility, but what we were trying to do is bring these various things to the attention of the Species Committee so that they're thinking about this and evaluating it, the operations plan, and just laying things out for the sector to be, so that everyone fully understands what they're getting into and the duration and the ramifications associated with it. That was the intent.
I know it's late. I understand the intent fully. I also understand fishermen are very creative writers when they have to be. I'm really concerned if the document doesn't say it specifically, that somebody's going to come in and through a creative writing course, write a management plan that comes up with things that we hadn't thought of, and, you know, again, we're going to be a year behind and a dollar short and a big chunk of tax short when that happens. And I would feel a lot better if we had some degree of commonality in here, that we said, okay, people form sectors based on some form of commonality, that you can't have a couple boats from New Jersey and a couple boats from the Eastern Gulf of Maine. I just think it's going to be extremely difficult to not only to monitor but also to judge how it's going to be run and stuff. I mean, I don't think sectors should be self-selecting, I guess is what I'm saying. I think it should be inshore draggers from the Gulf of Maine, inshore gillnetters from the Gulf of Maine, charterhead boats from the Gulf of Maine, whatever it is, but it should be some group of people, and that includes some degree of similar gear type, similar fishing pattern, something. I think if we start mixing up Georgia's Bank boats and Southern New England boats and Gulf of Maine boats and different gear types, we're going to be in a mess. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think we're going to be in a mess.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In an effort to address at least some of the questions I heard from Jim Salisbury, perhaps direct the discussion a little bit more, I would like to make an amendment to the motion. I would like to add at the end of that and to adopt the recommendations as a policy to be transmitted to individual species committees for their development of sector programs.
There a second to the amendment? Seconded by Phil Rule. Any discussion on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe for the to streamline things, I'm sure I can look at it as a friendly amendment. Again, I was trying to do it on the two-part phase, but if the will of the council is to address it together, I'm very friendly about that.
We seem to be struggling with two phases all day. We kind of always want to talk about the one thing we're not talking about. So.
Well, as long as nobody moves to split the question, I'll be all right.
I hope not. Jim?
Well, prior to the motion, I was going to offer a similar suggestion, but to do the opposite, which would be to move it to pass it and to move it on forward as an amendment and work out the process whereby we could do that, including perhaps even rolling in the accountability measures and catch limits issues for all of the species into this amendment. So I think that, in my opinion, I think there's that's sort of a separate discussion, and I would like to move. I would like to see the policy issues be accepted as the policy, but how we implement those left open. So this is the amendment is there. I'm not going to go to the point of splitting the question, but I think that really is the issue, the main issue today, and we mostly agree on what the policies are. What we don't agree on is how we're going to get there from here, and it seems to me we ought to have specific discussion about that. I would prefer to see it carried forward as an amendment.
Any other discussion? John Nelson.
Just for clarification, Mr. Chairman, you know, I appreciate Jim's position and everything, and maybe the thing to do is to go back to the original motion and then forward the discussion of what do we do, what's the next step that the council needs to take based on Paul's comments as far as the workload. The concerns you've heard here already as far as how shall we move ahead, which way shall we go, and the executive committee should really wrestle with that and come back to the council with a plan that addresses the workload, which includes this on how are we going to move ahead. So that may sound like I'm passing the buck, but I think that the executive committee would have more of an opportunity to really look at a comprehensive work plan based on the ACLs and AMs that are going to have to be done and how we're going to do it. And maybe there is some hybrid of this whole thing that makes sense. And the committee was not advocating anything. We were merely looking for guidance. The chair was looking for guidance because I know there were a ton of proposals that were coming forward. And I think my feeling was, geez, it really should have uniform evaluation of these if you're going to consider any. And since we apparently would be considering them, then I'd like to make sure that they were considered in a uniform fashion. So my suggestion is the council, by consensus, says, yeah, thank you for the oversight committee. They've addressed the terms of reference and other things. The executive committee will now take this under advisement on how we're going to proceed forward, whether it's a policy or an amendment or some hybrid associated with that.
Well, we have a motion to amend on the floor, so. I guess that's better than splitting it. Well, it actually hasn't become part of the motion to split anyways. One second.
I don't want to complicate things too much, but we have till 2010 to do ACLs, AMs, and 2011 for, you know, fisheries that aren't overfished like scallops. We don't have to do ACLs, AMs till 2011. At executive committee, we talked about having the vote here. Do you want to go forward with a sector omnibus amendment so that people can start their sectors, but some work would have to be done, like you said, by the Species Committee. And, you know, I mean, that can be done. Phil is going to have to switch over to monkfish. So I said, Laurie then has got to, hey, if you vote on it today, Laurie can start sectors and start working on the amendment. And because there's no more waiting because we're waiting on data. Phil's got to stop sectors and start working on monkfish based on the assessment coming up next month. So we did talk about it at executive committee, and it's up to you. My recommendation to the executive committee was, you know, let's call it policy. My experience is we've never had luck having a ad hoc committee do species work. Never had luck doing it. You have to have the species do the amendments. Just doesn't work to an omnibus. I mean, we can give it a try. The thing that I'm concerned about is funding. Now we're going to have Herring Start meeting to add the stuff to the omnibus amendment. Every plan would have to meet every committee. Now, we just got $75,000 from Pat, so I have the money. I can use that lapse money instead of hiring someone. I can use that to have sector meetings if you want to do that. But, you know, all those decisions, just by putting them off till September, might get us out of here earlier, but you've lost now July and August. You've lost 3 months, and that's a lot of time. So you should make the decision today. Do you want to do policy and then give it to species committees to develop their amendments along with, you know, ACLs and AMs, or do you want to go forward and try to do a omnibus amendment and we'll use some of the $75K to fund some species committee meetings? Some of the folks are going to meet an awful lot.
Here's one of the things that concerns me is if we move forward with an amendment, as we decided, we're going to end up possibly holding certain FMPs hostage because other FMPs can't answer some of the critical questions. I think overall that's one of the things that really concerns me. In other words, if we're going to ask the species committees or the sector committee to establish what the baseline needs to be for each fishery, whether there's transfers and a whole host of other questions and issues that need to be sorted out on an FMP by FMP basis, some of those are going to be very contentious. Some won't, but probably most will. The ones that won't are going to have to wait for the ones that will to get their act in order before we can transmit an omnibus. So it may end up taking just as long. Anyone who hasn't commented, still rule.
Thank you, John. That's kind of like the way I'm looking at it, except I'm looking at it from the opposite side. That if you do the amendment, you have that issue. But in my view, you're going to have that issue if you do it under doing the ACLs and species by species. You're also going to have that issue that, you know, you could have each one if there's some movement on one species or another that doesn't really want sectors to go forward. They're going to stall that sector policy just as fast doing it under the ACLAM one as doing it under the amendment one. So I don't really know which way to go there. My real concern is, or I haven't sat here for a little while, watched this, that if you do it under a plan by plan, then you're back to the amendment argument and each plan will come up with a Christmas tree of things that's going to go forward versus an amendment. An omnibus is going to be streamlined to handle, to a certain degree, to handle this and go versus, you know, well, we need to add this to this one and this to this one and this to this one. And I can see us sitting here saying 2010. Oh, you forgot my issue. So That'd be it.
I think the idea that this omnibus would be streamlined is like saying the Spruce Goose was streamlined, but anyone else on the council? Derailed train, yeah. Anyone else on the council that hasn't spoke? Go to the audience, Jim O'Malley, then Harriet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim O'Malley, East Coast. I would strongly suggest that you change the word policy to guideline, because there are going to be a lot of things that people propose that make sense that you'd like to approve, but, oh, gee, your policy is in place and it violates your policy. You haven't even begun to think of the things that might be proposed in the future. And as far as the omnibus amendment is concerned, since it is going to have to go to each species, I think a lot of us in the audience are wondering, why does the omnibus amendment have to be anything more than sectors are allowed in this FMP? And then let the individual development of proposals be reviewed by the species committee. But of those two things, I would say that even more important than the second is the idea that the policy be changed to something a little bit weaker in case you find yourself in a position where you can't do something you want to do because of something that you did. Thank you.
Harriet. And then Mr. Libby.
I've looked at it quickly, just this paper, but I've been thinking about, of course, the sectors as they've been presented before. And as I've said before, and I truly believe, it's an ITQ. And if we just let's take three, I just want to look at three items here on the paper. On page 2, when you come to the explanation of sector, the agreements and all has nothing to do with it. We know that. We're talking about a resource that belongs to everybody, and how is it going to impact other people forward? And it says, and last line, and which has been granted a TAC in order to achieve objectives consistent with applicable FMP goals and objectives. That's a big statement. There's a lot of things being said there, and a lot of things that are going to be, I think, set astray. It is a quota. You're going to move a quota, and you're just going to move it. You need your quota. It's all based on quotas. It's not like before when we talked about when quotas weren't allowed by the Congress, and so days, you could do it because it was days. To me, I'd say it's still a quota. Okay, let's go to page 3. We now say right here, and would be based on historic landings. Okay, let's take the historic landings. That's a quota. And there's what you allowed in multi-species, you allowed the leasing. With the leasing, people have leased, they have leased permits over the years onto one boat. They come now with that one boat into the sector, and they bring that allocation with them. Now you have those boats, you leased it off over the, say, the last 5 years or the last year. Those boats are out there, and now they can go fish their days because you've allowed people to either lease, you've allowed them to take permits and put them on skiffs so they can own two or three, lease the boats onto their own boat. They've created a history, which is poundage. That's going to impact when you say the question, is it going to impact other people in the fishery? Of course it is. That's exactly what it's going to do. It's a quota. And when you start to rely it to the West Coast, they didn't allow that. You had your boat. They allowed leasing, but you can't get rid of your boat. Here you even allow people to get rid of boats. There's all kind of things that have gone on. Someone who's, say leased 5 permits and he's created history, that's the history he's going to bring into those sectors. He brings that history. Now those other boats, those days aren't leased anymore. Now they could be out there on boats. Now they go and fish their days. They're fishing their days in the multi-species fisheries. The quota's coming in here. You're talking about over 100% of quota. This to me, it needs more, at Minsk, it needs more work. to go back to your committee. And now you're more or less saying you're going to depend on the other committees to see all this. And you're talking about people enter into a contract. They enter into contracts with banks every day. And that's why we have people come in and auction off boats, because contracts go wrong. And like they say, you can't get blood from a stone. What are you going to do when it goes awry with it and everybody's livelihood, and the country itself is depending on how you manage the resource here? I think what this paper has done is it's brought to the surface many of the problems, and you need more work here at the low side. Thank you.
Mr. Libby.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm in favor of having sectors. We got a small group of boats, Port Clyde, that's formed a co-op, fish the similar gear. Looks to me like it's a chance for us to try to take our little bit of quota that we'll have, which really isn't very much between the 10 boats, and manage it ourselves. And I'm in favor of trying to bring back the fishery so there is more fish. If I have a small amount of quota, I'm obviously going to have to get more money for my fish, but I'll have to deal with that on my own. But I think the management alternative is good, and I think all management alternatives are good, not just to be stuck with my days because I'm failing with that. So I would urge you to at least put this on the amendment so that we have a chance to try to stay in business. Thanks very much.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would like to encourage the council to continue with the amendment process. It does sound like there are some resources that are available for staff and money for a few meetings. I also wanted to just add that I'm a member of the of MAFAC, which is an advisory committee to the agency, and we recently looked at the ACL and AM measures that are required in Magnuson. And the committee's recommendation to the agency is that they first identify four councils, all FMPs that currently meet that requirement and not require councils to amend all FMPs. And herring is a good example of that. Herring has annual catch limits and accountability measures. It's a hard tack. The fishery closes when the tack is reached. So it's really unclear if the agency likes our recommendation. I mean, they don't have to accept it. But we would hope that they would identify for councils and not waste staff time amending all FMPs. And I certainly would like to see the amendment process move forward, and I think that a number of reasons why that should happen have been identified by others, and it's late, so I'll leave it at that.
Yes, sir.
Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. Unfortunately, we'd brought this forward before with a plan in a previous meeting that was unfortunately turned down. But we would like to see this move forward, and we're glad to see that it's on the table, and we'd like to see the most streamlined, easiest way to be brought forward to us commercial fishermen and us working fishermen. I heard somebody comment earlier today outside, let's fish smarter, not harder. Let's bring it together. Thank you.
Thank you. Back to the council. David?
Yeah, I have a question for John, I guess, and that is, given the concerns and the questions that have been raised here today, would another committee meeting to address those issues, would that be beneficial to bring it back in September as perhaps a more perfected document, or do you think this is about as good as it's going to get?
Dave, with time, I think anything can be improved. I don't think we thought that we were going to be have the most overarching policy guidelines that you could ever come up with. I think the council has the flexibility of moving ahead, whether it's with this motion or some other motion, and any refinements that need to be brought forward to the council for additional refinements certainly can always be done during that process. I mean, if it goes to a species committees and they say, we think that only like vessels should be in the sectors, is that okay with the council for ground fish? The council can make that determination at that time.
Dana, did I see your hand up? I haven't heard from you all day. I'm going to let you cut the line.
No, I've been right here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
I can vouch for that, too.
These are all very good, valid points, but and this could be perfected, but I tend to think that the approach we have here probably would work. We could take a little bit more time and work this out, but you know, we're going to be talking about ground fish tomorrow, and there are a lot of people in this industry that are hanging on by a thread. And if we stall this too much, even to try to make something that's... I'm reminded by a saying that good should not stand in the way of perfection or the backwards of that, and I think Rips mentioned that, and I think we're trying... There's a lot of good concerns here, but I think the longer we monkey around and try to make this perfect, there are a lot of good people that are going to go broke. So if, and I don't see that by going this, I can support this approach, and I don't see why any of the questions that's been raised can't be answered in this approach by the committees. And I think it would, and if there's a real red flag that comes up, the council, we're going to be talking about it again. We can beat this to death and forever at the council process after it comes back out of there. So those are my comments, Mr. Chairman. I'm just thinking of the people that might benefit by an expeditious process here, and too much time and too many questions, they may not be in the game at all. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Well, I don't like the motion because I would rather see us continue to pursue the omnibus amendment strategy. If I was chair of a committee and I knew that there was going to be great interest in sectors for that particular species or fishery, I would be tearing my hair out, whatever is left, because I would know that I would have to deal with all of these specifics and the unknowns and still unanswered questions that relate to these specifics. It would occupy a tremendous amount of my committee's time and divert me away from other important committee business. That's at least my suspicion. But I've always favored the pursuit of the omnibus strategy because it seemed to me that would be the template that we could draw on. It would make it relatively simple for a committee. Therefore, we could draw on that template and then just move on it, as opposed to having to debate every single issue and nuance that would come up specific to, well, what I see before me now. But I appreciate the work done by the committee, but again, as indicated in the early comments by John, we're suddenly going in a different direction, and that is we take this policy or this guidance and we use it for each individual species committee as opposed to having that broad template that would be provided through an omnibus. So I still like the omnibus approach, and I suspect that I'll vote against this.
Rip.
I hate to disagree with my colleague from the Granite State, but over time not everything can be improved. My hairstyle is one thing. But I would like to see if I could get the mover to make one small, I guess it would be clarification improvement, and after the word policy, in parentheses, put in guidelines.
Okay. Bill?
Yeah. If people are considering the omnibus amendment approach, I've heard different perspectives on what that amendment would look like. One is it's a very simple thing that says all FMPs can adopt sectors, and then you leave the minutia up to each species plan. At the extreme other end of that spectrum is that the omnibus amendment would address the minutia of every FMP, and it would go forward as a block. And I think, you know, if this doesn't pass and you go with the in the direction of an amendment, that should be clarified.
The legal guidance is you can have a broad brush omnibus amendment, broad brush, that says sectors are allowed. You can't do that. You need to have in the amendment what are the baselines for each FMP. If you're going to do an omnibus amendment, all these questions have got to be addressed. What is your baseline? What is your maximum participation for each species plan? All those things that are you're leaving to the species committee will have to be done by the sector committee as an omnibus plan. It can't be broad brush. The lawyers have told us you've got to have the details in the amendment. Then the individual species can then framework once they get the plan on what the plan looks like. But you have to have the details in the amendment with the detailed analysis.
All right. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick. I'm struggling to determine what's the most expeditious manner to move forward sectors, and I've waffled back and forth listening to all the conversation, but I concur with Dr. Pierce's thoughts of overlaying the committees with too many details. The committees, each of them have significant workloads with a lot of different other details to work with, and I think for that matter, I would not support this motion. I will support, if it comes back to vote, a motion to move forward with an omnibus.
Can I assume, Terry, then, that you would like the sector committee to continue on and answer the questions that are outstanding in the document?
Carry on with the cross-cutting issues.
Okay. I'm going to call the question, and we'll see where we are after that. Okay. Everyone had an opportunity to reread the amended motion. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Nine. Opposed? Six. Motion to amend carries. We're on to the main motion. I have my stuff in order. Jim Salisbury.
Well, I'd like to speak to the main motion. I think that several of the things that we've done to it have now made it almost automatic that each species committee will have to wrestle almost with all the issues over again, because these are now guidelines. They're going to be referred to the species committee to deal with, and that species committee has to look at all of the issues that have been posed and more or less thought through. And as we all know, that'll engender huge discussions. The other alternative provides the ability, if we were to go through with an amendment process, we could probably answer most of these questions. And as an example, you could say, here's what the amendment says. If the species committee has some valid reason that it can't work or won't work, then they can amend that. They can go do something in an amendment which would change it. But basically, you'd get everybody started on a common footing. And you're really only asking the species committee to give you advice on one or two questions, as they're outlined here. Some particular question, if they have a reason why they need to do it differently in that species, they could answer that question. So to me, that's much more efficient use of the committee to get the issue going. When we change the two guidelines and throw it back to the committee, it's basically start over again. So it seems to me to be an extreme, it's a long way to go about getting to that point, I'd say, is to try it through an amendment and then abort the amendment at the last minute and start over again doing it from scratch. So I would vote, I'd be against the amendment as it, or the motion as it's amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a process question here. I believe that this was not an amended motion. The maker of the motion accepted my motion as a friendly. So what we voted on the last time was we voted on the main motion. There was no motion there by me and seconded by someone. It was accepted as a friendly.
I believe that there was a motion to amend to add language onto the end, which, if you could scroll up, please, talk about transmitting individual species to the individual committees. Are you saying that was a friendly?
After I made the motion, I believe the maker indicated that he would consider that to be a friendly, to motion.
I think that was to the point of inserting guidelines in parentheses, but I could be wrong. No? Okay.
But again, the maker of the motion can't decide whether it's a friendly or not. Right. You have to say without objection.
Right.
So, I mean, if everybody agrees to that, then
we're going to have to vote on. We're going to have to re-vote on this, I think, to be right. We're going to treat that as an amendment. But your point is well taken. I think there was enough, at least in my mind, there's enough confusion that we need to vote on this again. John Nelson?
No, Mr. Chairman, I was trying to do it as a friendly amendment, it was listed as an amendment, and I think that's what everyone thought they were voting on, and that would be my point, is that, therefore, if that's what people thought they were voting on, then that's reality, and therefore now you have to deal with the main motion. So that's the way life goes sometimes.
Okay, Sally.
Yeah, I'll speak in support of the main motion. That's how I voted on the amended motion. The sector committee, I feel its work was really done. There were so many questions as John went through the memo that he put together that need to be referred to the species committees anyway. It's not a matter of starting over again. I think the sector committee did what it could without input from the species committees, and that's what we need to get now. I've argued both sides of this as, we've tried to figure out what the most expeditious way is to get this kind of tool in the hands of all the permit holders who want to use it in a way that's going to be effective for each different fishery. I think at this point, this is the best way to do it. It's the best way that we have to do it. I think what's incumbent upon us is to make sure that the fisheries that are in fact interested in this get this tool finally developed. And we've heard a lot from the herring fishery. We've heard some from people who hold monkfish permits, mostly as it overlaps with groundfish. And we've heard from people in the scallop fishery and red crab. So all of those, I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we finally, we take this the last measure and get these provisions in place for all of these individual FMPs. And I do think that this is the best way to do it. Thanks.
Phil Rule.
Thank you, John. Just one quick question, I guess. If we adopt this as it is, it'll be for new sectors. Will this affect the groundfish sector? I mean, my understanding is groundfish sector has already got the language and what have you. So this, until something else comes forward, groundfish will stay as it is.
Yeah, I mean, my read on this is that it doesn't change what's currently in the regs. David Pierce, then David Gabe.
Yeah, motion to substitute. I would move that we direct the sector committee to continue its development of an omnibus sector amendment.
Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Okay. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah, I think we've
to direct the sector committee to continue its development of an omnibus sector amendment.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Seconded by Jim Salisbury. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 3, 4, 5. 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9. Motion fails 5-9. John Nelson abstains. Okay. So back on the main motion. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Process question, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay.
My process question was, if we vote this as amended now, the sector committee will be disbanded and the individual species committees will take the 7-odd page letter that John has crafted, use that as guidance, and then answer all the unanswered questions on an individual species basis. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? We're losing one every time. Motion carries 12-4. John, anything else?
No, I think that that answers both questions that I had. And again, I do want to, since we're disbanded now, I do want to thank the committee members for all of their work. I think they tackled everything in a very open and transparent fashion, and I think were very thoughtful in their deliberations. So thank you, one and all.
Phil, there's nothing else, is there, under sector? Okay. Remember, I'll remind everybody that we meet tomorrow morning again at 8 a.m. We take up the business of scallops. And GMRI has its open house right now.